that will actually impinge on the marriage, which may be a function of expectations of the particular community that you're in, and it kind of plugs into all of these subjective things. And in theory, it should definitely be a different tier. In theory, it should only be the kind of thing which the person himself, which the dater themselves, the other dater, the other side, should have to ask about. You know, either they care about it or they don't care about it, and then if they ask, then that's one thing. If they don't ask, then not. If it's, there are subjective areas, there are things which could be so impinging on their lives, in theory, which, you know, would put it into a different category. So it's hard to give an absolute type of approach to that. You know, in general, it's nice. It would be probably a happier world if we could give a wider type of understanding to people's families' issues. In some places, some societies that works less, and some societies that works more, and that's part of the complexity of the whole issue. Somebody raised an issue once, you know, without getting into details, but there is an issue in general where family members who have needs are neglected because they are kind of hidden away because of the potential that they'll have on shidduchim. So in addition to the damage that does to the family member who has the needs, it's really a paradox. It doesn't make any sense, because if you believe it's such a big deal that you have to hide it, then you're not allowed to hide it. So one way or the other, that if it is such a significant issue, then it shouldn't be allowed to be hidden. So that's part of the problem with that social issue. Hi, I'm over the first set. If it depends again what kind they are. If they are in the category where you for sure have to tell, then that would be the answer. If it's the kind of thing which, you know, they have allergies to plutonium, then you could also kind of draw them out. You can say, oh, well, you know, nothing more than the average person or something like that. And they say, well, I want to know anything. So then, you know, that would... Right, so I think then it would be the Shadchan's role to kind of take a gauge of what the person wants to know about. And like Rizal Bersin said, to reveal a little bit and then see where the person goes. But yeah, well, you know, I know they had surgery a few years ago. I think that was a few years ago. And then the person says, really, what was it about? And you say, well, it's about this, but I think it's under control. And so under control how? They have to take pills, they have any restrictions, they have any meds, so then see what kind of questions they ask. And then if you indicate enough that there's more to know, and then if they say, well, okay, as long as it's under control, I don't need to know anything more, it's part of this whole gauging experience of kind of taking the lead from them. And there's also, if the person trusts you enough, you can also say, there's really nothing serious, before you get engaged, come back to me. Which is legitimate. Well, it's not a joke, it's a legitimate approach also. That, right? It depends. You know, if a person, very often you find the opposite, that your son-in-law is so wonderful in so many other ways that... I don't know your son-in-law.
But it's also, I don't know that, but it's not anything that has not anything, it's very, very hard. So it's not anything that's a lot of.
Right.
That's something that you see right away, first of all. And second of all, I'm not talking about somebody
who's not like you. I understand, but I'm saying that I don't think it's necessarily the case that. So I don't think it's necessarily the case that if I was the mother, if I was the parent, I would have wanted to be treated differently, because very often the parents themselves are happy that they didn't know every detail beforehand, because they're so happy with the son-in-law, they're so happy with the other qualities of the person, as the spouse themselves is so happy with everything else that's going on, that they're happy that they only knew this later on, so they didn't color their picture. So it's not an absolute principle. In general, with the principle of the Hapurecha Kamocha, there's the kind of thing that you would want to know, so then you probably should tell somebody else. But I don't know if it's an absolute rule that even if you were the mother-in-law, you would necessarily want to be brought in earlier with all this information. Maybe you would want to know Dafka before the engagement. You know, an engagement is still a pretty significant, before the engagement is still a pretty significant adventure. So I don't know if you could say as a cross the board principle that if it was your child, you would want to know everything much earlier on. So that's part of what we mentioned before, that if we decide that something is in the category of something that has to be revealed, and you are sure the person is not going to tell, that's really where the whole question comes up. Because it's always preferable to let the person themselves tell. So if that's the path that can happen, then that's always the best. And really, most of this discussion is really in the case where you've tried that, and or you know for whatever reason, whatever definite knowledge, that they're not going to reveal. Hi. Sorry. That would probably be more in the category of something that has to be revealed, that if it causes a side effect, which is equivalent to having a certain condition, so then... Maybe yes, maybe no. I guess that's where people have different types of attitudes. And if they ask those questions, then... So that's right. So let's get into some of those examples. So let's maybe try to... Right. So I want to try to get... I'm not sure how long... Let's try to get some of the specific cases and see how some of that is reflected through some of the literature. Hi.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly one of the major issues that... Right. So before dating, maybe not. Maybe later on. But that's also part of the... It's interesting if you look at some of the literature, how it talks about that. So let's talk about that in a second. So just to finish off for a second, the point of the doctor's obligation, I think we're still in the middle of that. If a doctor has to worry about the moral commitment of the oath or the issue of possibly scaring away other patients, all of those are real questions. But also, what about losing his livelihood? What about losing his job? What if it's going to happen that if he reveals he's going to end up not being able to practice anymore? So that has a couple of issues to it. One issue is a subset of what we just said a second ago, that future patients won't be able to be treated by this doctor if he can't function. So that's one issue. But what about from a Parnassa angle? So from a Parnassa angle, so many poskim felt that if it's anything other than a direct threat to life, there is a case to be made that one is not obligated to give up their livelihood for this. Various lumbish explanations why that is. So strictly speaking, Lashamar Adam Re'echa is a prohibition. Do not stand idly by. And strictly speaking, the principle of the Ramah is that in order not to violate a prohibition, one has to be ready to give up all of his money. Not everyone agreed with that. The Vilna Gaon, others didn't agree with that, but many work off of that premise. So now there's a discussion, why shouldn't it apply here? That if you could protect somebody from harm, so then you're in violation of Losam Rodam Reach if you don't do it, so you should be obligated to give up everything in order not to violate that prohibition. So there's a whole set of approaches as to why that's not necessarily the case. Some understand that even if it's a prohibition, but if you violate it passively, it doesn't have the same rule. So a prohibition that you have to give up your money for, like being Machal Shabbos or something like that, but to stand by and not do something, might not be in that category. The Mechashis and others understood it that way. Others thought that it's a subset of Hashavas Areda, that the returning lost property is also subject to certain limitations. If it's going to have too much of an effect on your own property, you're not obligated to return somebody else's property. So if you have to take a week off work to return somebody's napkin, so it's not worth it. So there is a certain cheshbon that's made in that category as well. And others understand that not all the poskim follow the Rambam. So we said before that the Rambam has a more expansive view of Lo Shamar Adam Re'echa, that it's not only a person at mortal risk, but it's any type of harm. So some feel that in the case you're going to have to give up your livelihood, you can rely on the opinion that it only applies to mortal harm. So if it really is a situation of mortal harm, you know somebody's going to kill somebody else, somebody's really posing a threat to somebody else's life, so then it's very likely you'd have to reveal no matter what, no matter what commitment, no matter what the issue it poses to your livelihood or to anything else. But if it's the broader type of damage that we said before in the name of the Rambam, a more expansive understanding of what this means, but then if it's going to have such an impact on your life, there is a stronger basis to say that you're not necessarily as obligated or you have that type of leeway. So that's something that the post can discuss. Okay, so let's try to look a little bit at some of the literature that is talked about. So first of all, it goes back already to Sefer Chasidim, is one of the Rishonim. So he first has an exhortation where he tells everybody that person who's going to engage in a dating relationship or whatever it was called in those days, a person who's going to get married, is forbidden to conceal any type of mum, any type of a problem. And of course, again, what exactly constitutes a problem is part of the discussion here. The Chafetz Chaim, when he talks about the general rules applying to a third party, so the third party, again, is obligated to reveal something which could harm a potential marriage partner or a business partner or anything else, he has basically four conditions over there. And generally talks about Tawela, she has many conditions. Here in the marriage context, he mentions four conditions. He says that a person should know it absolutely, the person should know the information for sure, that the person should be constantly, the issue should be one that's really going to impact their marital life, impact their life together, and not stomp some issue that is not necessarily going to have an impact on their life or is more subjective. The person should not editorialize, shouldn't build on it anymore, should basically just say what it is without going into any more of a embellishment. And his fourth criterion here is more controversial, the topic of a lot of debate, that he says the person should have no other ulterior motives against this person. The person shouldn't have any grudge against the person he was talking about. So he's also happy to say the bad news about this person because he has an issue with this person. So the Chafetz Chaim felt that was an impediment to speaking with Tawelis. That was very controversial because others objected that if you have to save the third party, so what excuse do you have not to do that just because you have a grudge against the person? So that was a controversial issue. I think we mentioned in the past weeks that somebody said, following that logic from a Lumdisha perspective, you'd say that, let's say somebody's sick on Yom Kippur. So somebody's sick on Yom Kippur, so they have to eat. So it's as if you're going to say, well, he's not allowed to eat if he also likes the food, only if he's only doing it to save his life. So we don't say it in that case. So through here, even if a person has an ulterior motive, if he's obligated to do this, he should be obligated anyway. So there was a whole controversy about that condition. Like I mentioned before, there's an entire volume in the Wally Library all defending the Chafetz Chaim on this one point. This one issue that he says, that he shouldn't have any other motives mixed in. Practically speaking, again, it's hard to hold back if it's really a question that's going to impact somebody else. So presumably what we're going to say is that a person who does have a pre-existing grudge preferably should have somebody else do it if that's possible, not be the person if it's possible not to be. Or if it has to be you, so then you should do whatever you can to clear your mind before going in and to be aware of the potential impact that this can have on how you view something and how you say something. And probably should also be disclosed to the person you're speaking to. The person you're speaking to should know, I take it in context, okay, I have a history with this person, and I have a grudge with this person, but I feel I have to tell you about such and such. And then the listener can say, okay, knowing that this person has whatever bias, I'll evaluate whatever it is that's being said. Okay, so that being said, in terms of the medical conditions, so there is a range of literature about what has to be revealed. The Chelkis Yaakov, for example, of Yaakov Breisch, has a tshuva, which is a classic tshuva quoted a lot in the latest part, where he talks about a young man, Nebuch, who had terminal cancer that he didn't know about. The doctor knew about it and had not told him about. But the doctor knew that he was not going to live very long and that he's not going to be able to have children. So the Chelkis Yaakov says that for sure. If he knows that somebody is potentially considering marrying this person, he said that's an example of something where he says he absolutely would have to tell the person, because there's no question the person would want to know all of that before getting involved. By contrast, the sefer called Tshuvas Birka Shlomo Mordechai, Birka Shlomo Ruvain, it's not such a well-known sefer, by the Baruch Shlomo Ruvain Schlesinger, where he discusses a situation where there was a woman who apparently had some kind of a tumor removed, and she had it removed earlier, and now it's a little bit later, and now she's had to take pills to make sure it doesn't come back. So he thought that was a circumstance where you didn't have to reveal, because if essentially it's something in the past and the issue of keeping it at bay is something relatively minor and controllable, and in theory it's possible that the spouse is never going to even encounter this or know about this, we thought that was in the category of something that you wouldn't have to reveal. In terms of the question of children, the question of potential to have children, so it's interesting where Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he talks about a woman who is about 20 or so and who has not yet started to have a menstrual cycle. And doctors told her that it probably will start eventually after she gets married and consummates the marriage, it probably will start. So he thought that was something that you're not obligated to reveal. He thought that there was a significant basis to believe that it probably would change, and that that's not something that it would have to reveal. And he says an interesting principle, which one could quibble with, but this is what he writes, that he says there's a big difference between no children and fewer children. So even if it means that a person is likely to have a slower time having children, a person is likely to have some difficulty having children, but is not prevented completely from having children, so it's one thing. If a person can't have any children, that's for sure, as other posts can emphasize, would have to be revealed. But if it's that a person is likely to have children, but not as many children as other people might have, so then he didn't think that was in the category of something that was so absolute that necessarily had to be revealed, which is an interesting principle. It revealed at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so I guess he would have to, that would be part of the judgment of what does very possibly mean. And maybe you need a doctor to consult on that whole question of what is very possibly. So you can't, so that is, right, so, right, so that, like,
it's,
right. Right, so that, you know, it's probably the kind of thing which would have to be revealed at the very beginning, because it's such a major issue that a lot of people wouldn't want to get involved beforehand. Strictly speaking, for sure, or for sure have to be revealed before the marriage. Even before the marriage, a person has a right to know that. The difference between when it's told is less absolute. There's a strong case that that type of situation is such a major issue for people probably much earlier on, but the difference between earlier on and before the marriage is much less significant than not being told before the marriage. But if there's certainly no possibility of having children or no reasonable possibility of having children, so that, like, for example, if it's Liaz or another, so thought that was an issue that for sure had to be revealed. Hi. That's an interesting question. So that's not an objective medical question. So that also, the person really, it's up to them to really ask. That's the kind of fact that certainly has an answer one way or another. It's not the kind of thing the person has no idea exists. So the person really, the man really has an obligation to decide for himself how important it is for him to know that when and to really ask the question. So I think the only question would only really come up if he knew, for example, that the woman was concealing her age, was deceiving it. That would become a more serious issue. But I think, absent that, that's the kind of thing that the guy knows is a question, so he can either choose to ask it or not, and then your obligation would be flow from that. Rav Moshe, on the other side, does also talk about a situation where there was a young man with a genetic disease, which was a high possibility he was going to pass on to his children, a 50% possibility. So in that case, he says, for sure, also that's something that he thinks that you would have to reveal. That's something that has such a significant impact. That's something that would have to be brought forward as well. In general, how much longer can we go? How much longer are people around for? We'll go for another few minutes. But one of the issues that, in addition to some of those examples from the literature, you want to get a broad survey of a lot of the literature out there. So there was an article in the journal Tchumen that was written by a married couple. I think their name is the two doctors. I think their last name is Katan, I think. And they quote a basic principle. They quote the principle we mentioned before of revealing a little bit and seeing what type of concern you see from the other side and then answering accordingly. And also as a basic principle that anything which most people are marked on and has significant effect, so then that's the kind of thing you'd have to mention beforehand. And other things would be more in the subjective category. So if they ask, so then you have an obligation to reveal. And if not, so then that would be a different story. Another major issue, just that's relevant to the whole medical confidentiality issue, not necessarily so much in terms of the shidduchim issue, but just to quickly mention a few other issues that are relevant to the doctors and to the issue of medical confidentiality. So it's also a question, what if somebody is not necessarily going to get married, but let's say somebody poses a risk to the public at large. Let's say, for example, the issue many of the posts can talk about, if a person is prone to epileptic seizures and wants to drive. So is there an obligation to tell the DMV about that, make it clear that there is such an issue. So here, Mavaji Yosef, and Sitz Eliezer and a number of others, Nachum Rabinowitz, all have tshuvas about this, because they all essentially say the same thing. If a person poses a public threat, so then confidentiality is not going to be binding, it's not going to override, and there's an obligation to reveal, and I think that is the essentially the attitude that most posts can take. It's interesting, and that's tshuva nechavidash, where Rabbi Yosef talks about this, so he quotes a principle which a lot of others quote as well. There's a sefer called Piskei Tshuva, not the famous one at the bottom of the Yerodea, but there's a Piskei Tshuva and Arachayim was written by one of the Dayanim in Vilna, I think about 150 years ago. So he says that everyone gets all concerned about the Lashon Hara. I think he's writing before the Chafetz Chaim, that everyone gets all concerned about Lashon Hara. They don't get concerned about the equal issue of what they're obligated to say. But if something is a threat to people, if something poses a risk, so then that's an obligation, and that's an important issue to keep in mind as well. So that's that point of balance about everything that we've been talking about, he emphasizes that in that tshuva, and that's an important issue to keep in mind. Just to quickly mention a few other topics, we probably shouldn't go into them in detail, but just to mention issues that are issues, and we could talk about them at a later date if anybody's interested. But one of the issues that comes up also is the question of secretaries. So if you have somebody who's in between, who is not really, strictly speaking, necessary for the process, so it's one thing for a doctor to say something and for the person who knows, but what is the permissibility, let's say, of a secretary coming in the middle, of somebody who is going to make it easier for the doctor by writing it down? Is that permissible or not? That was a complicated issue. Sitz Eliezer assumes that this is permissible, that this is something which is necessary for the system to work effectively, so that's an extension of Tawelas. Others weren't so convinced. I had a conversation recently with Znayatorsky, who thought this was a very serious topic. He was talking in educational context. He says that, let's say, a principal wants to write a letter to the student's parents because the student has a disciplinary issue. So he was very unsure that there is permission for the principal to have the secretary type up the letter. He thought that maybe the principal should have to type the letter himself, that this is the kind of thing in which intermediaries shouldn't be involved. And it's interesting that Sitz Eliezer's tshuva about the doctor, so he also throws in the fact that part of how patients, when they get involved, so they know that this is the system. And he also talks about a situation where you have doctors reporting on each other. Let's say you have a school system, medical school system, where the doctors are supposed to write reports about each other, so it's important that they write these reports because it's important that we have qualified doctors. But is there, let's say, you have a medical school teacher who has to report on 10 different doctors, so he finds it's going to take him forever. It'll save a lot of time if he has his assistant write it up. So the Sitz Eliezer thought that was permissible based on this whole logic, and so that's also the understanding of the system. Rav Yashiv didn't agree. Rav Yashiv thought that this was not permissible, and even if it's going to take a doctor a long time, he has to write it himself. Rav Zilberstein, as Rav Yashiv's son-in-law, he thought there was an in-between. He said they'll have the assistant write up all the reports without the names, and the doctor can come and fill in the names later. And Rav Yashiv didn't accept that. He said, no, they're going to figure it out. It's not going to work. Even though you can make a strong case, like this, Rav Yashiv probably would, that if the doctor is going to lose time, he's not going to be able to save other lives when he's doing this, and it could be a situation of pikuach nefesh, which is a fair point to make. But nonetheless, that was apparently how Rav Yashiv understood it. Other issues to be aware of: the question of keeping archives in general. That's an important question. Is that making that information available forever? Is that a problem? I think we talked about that a little bit in past weeks. We mentioned that some of those who considered this issue thought that it met the basic threshold for what's considered toleles, because it said essentially it's necessary for the well-being of society. It's essentially going to be accurate without any type of embellishment, and it's not going to have any other motives other than the basic record keeping, so you thought that all plays a role in that basically being permissible. Side question, I guess, which I won't get into tonight, but just to be aware of, is also part of the whole trade-off question. So what if a person, in terms of medical information, what if it's not going to necessarily help the patient or help somebody who's directly involved with the patient, but help somebody else? Let's say it's for medical knowledge in general. That's a more complicated question, which touches upon some of the other issues, for example, the autopsy question. You know, the Noda Behuda dealt with the question of whether you can perform an autopsy, which is normally prohibited, so it's permissible if it's going to save a life. So that's because Pikuach Nefesh overrides the prohibition of autopsies. that says that he has a principle that's only true if it's going to save somebody's life now. If you can help somebody right now by performing this autopsy, that's one thing. But for the purposes of research that's going to apply in the future, he thought that was too far away. And others disagreed with that. But it's part of the whole question of how you make this balance. And there's a difference between direct medical assistance and research in the future, which is going to have different parameters. But once we're talking about that also, so it also raises the question of what if a patient's no longer alive? So it's not the standard type of paralysis where you're either going to help the patient or somebody's involved with the patient, but there's some value for the future based on this information. So then the parameters of Lashon Hara confidentiality change somewhat. Strictly speaking, you don't have an obligation to people who are no longer alive in terms of that. There is Cherub HaKadmonim. There was a decree of the early Gedolim that you shouldn't speak badly about people who are dead. Now, we have this attitude in English, we say you shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but say whatever you want about them when they're alive. So the halacha takes the opposite. The primary obligation is people who are alive, and it's extended to people who are no longer alive. But that extension is less severe, so the trade-off might be a little bit different after the person is no longer alive. And I'll just to mention one other issue that the post can talk about. You could have a mixture of issues. What if, and this could be a very real question, what if in order to cure somebody, a person has a disease that is not being diagnosed properly, in order to cure them, you'll have to reveal something that's unsavory about them, something that's not necessarily about revealing their medical condition, but revealing their behavior. Zilberstein gives an example, a person has underworld connections, which means Olam HaTachton, a person is connected with a mob, and that somehow affects their history. And so you're allowed to reveal that in order to treat them. So he says it's also part of a cost-benefit analysis. You have to know exactly what potential this information has to help them and what potential it has to cause other types of problems, and to weigh that carefully. So we've gone way over time, so maybe we'll just quickly recap what we spoke about, and we'll end it for tonight. We spoke about essentially the issue of the overlapping issues of what you're obligated to reveal, what a third party is obligated to reveal if you don't reveal, and what about the rules that apply to doctors, and so much of this comes up in that context. We talked about the fact that in general there's a prohibition to reveal secrets. Beyond that, there is this concept that somebody tells them anything, you should assume confidentiality, but that's more midas derech eretz. There's also a prohibition for a person to reveal anything that causes a person problems, even if it's not derogatory, anything a person would want to be kept confidential, and annoys them to be revealed. That's also called Lashon Hara. And then the fact that even for the listener, a person to try to seek out information about somebody else that's private, that's also a problem of Lashon Hara, even just to tell themselves. So in general, the prohibition of Lashon Hara would apply to all types of private information. But then the question of how Toelos is going to outweigh that is really our fundamental issue. We mentioned the two different models of Toelos. Either that Toelos is not at all Lashon Hara, which gives us a much wider berth to work with, or it is Lashon Hara, but it's outweighed by the need to protect an innocent party. And then the question of how you make that balance is really the essential issue. And one of the reflections of how complicated it is that instead of there being all or nothing situations, there's also a situation in the middle, a broad middle, where if somebody asks you, you have to reveal it, but not if they don't ask. And we talked a little bit about why that is, either because they've established that issue as something which is significant to them, which otherwise it might not have been, or because they established your opinion as significant, which otherwise it may have been less so. And we talked about the Stipler's principle in terms of preventing Gnevus Das. You mentioned we want to prevent Amekas Tos, anything that absolutely would disqualify the relationship. That for sure we want to prevent anything that would make a person feel they got misled is the second level, and anything that's Gnevus Das, where they would have entered into it just as happily, but they thought it was something else. In theory, that's a problem when it comes to business. We mentioned the Stipler's principle of why it doesn't play out that way in terms of relationships, because of the variability of human personalities, and people aren't interchangeable, and otherwise nobody's ever going to get married. And along that line, we mentioned also the Klausenberger's principle. That's a minig nowadays to not pay attention to some of the smaller issues. And minig mevat halacha, which again is probably because otherwise the world is not going to work. And then we talked about some of the ethical issues of doctors. The question of what if a doctor made a promise specifically to the patient? Is that promise binding? Probably not, but maybe yes. And since maybe yes, maybe the doctor should officially have it undone. We talked about whether there's a question of gezel there or not. So that's also something to keep in mind, but again, probably outweighed by the need to protect other people. And then we talked a little bit about the medical ethic issue in general, professional ethics, and a commitment not to tell anybody about anything. Is that binding or not? Again, such a laser technique attitude, probably not. So we talked about some of the consequences of that. Will it stop other patients from coming? To what extent is that a consideration? And also Yeshua, will you lose your job? And if you do, so are you obligated to? We mentioned the mainstream approach. You'd probably be only obligated to take that risk for a real, direct, physical, or moral risk for somebody else. But things that are of a lower threshold, probably not. We mentioned various approaches as to why you probably wouldn't have to under those circumstances. And we talked more specifically about some of the literature about marriage. We talked about the Sefer Hasidim, emphasizing the importance of not concealing a potential issue. The Chafetz Chaim's four conditions that a person should know it definitely, shouldn't embellish, should know that it impacts on the life together, and shouldn't have any ulterior motives. And we mentioned how that was a controversial point that was debated. Then we talked about the Chalkas Yakas truth about the young man with cancer who was going to die soon and wouldn't be able to have kids, where he said he did have to reveal. The Birkas Shlomo Ruvain's Tshuva about the woman who had a tumor removed earlier and now is taking pills to keep it at bay, where he said he probably would not have to reveal. I mentioned the question of the young woman who hadn't had a menstrual cycle yet and probably would, the doctor said, would probably eventually have children. How about the emotions that you did not have to reveal? A person who for sure can't have children, who you would have to reveal. And the genetic disease is being passed on, 50% chance of being passed on, and Moshe is saying for sure you would have to reveal that. And we talked about some of the basic principles about revealing a tefach and hiding a tutfachim, basically letting on a little bit and letting the person guide you as to how much they want to know about for some of these in-between points. And in general, an obligation to reveal something which is most people would consider to be a real impediment to going ahead with it, those kind of things being a more objective type of obligation to reveal. Then we talked about the question of public threats to society in general. If a doctor knows a person has a prone to epileptic fits and wants to drive, is he obligated to reveal that? Post can basically say he is obligated to reveal that. Also, part of the whole question of how he balances professional ethics together with these considerations. And then we talked about the use of secretaries or any intermediary who's not directly necessary. Is there any hazard to do that? That's what Eliezer thought there was. Eliezer was a little bit more unsure about it than that whole debate. We talked also about the issue of maintaining archives, why that's presumably permissible, but under what circumstances and for what reason. And then we talked about if this revealing this information is helpful to other people, not because this person poses a threat to anybody else, but because the knowledge could be beneficial to others. It's a more murky area. We talked about the autopsy question, you know, the Behud and others that differentiate between direct medical help and more potential research type things, which is a much less justifiable realm. And then about whether or not that changes if the person is no longer alive. And from the Lashon Hara perspective, it probably does make the balance a little bit different, even though strictly speaking there is some prohibition of Lashon Hara after the person is no longer alive. But again, it's the inverse of the way it's often said in the secular world. Not that you can't speak ill of the dead, but primarily you can't speak ill of the living and also the dead. And then we just mentioned the last question, this question of what if there are side issues which are unsavory but could be impacting the person's medical condition, such what extent the doctor is allowed to reveal that in order to try to get a better treatment for the patient. That's also part of the complicated cost-benefit analysis that comes into play in this very complex issue. So what's the upshot? The upshot is we have to pay a lot of attention to the question higher specifically now during the 9 days as we await the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So for many reasons we want to try to pay attention to this area of halacha, but also because it is so complex, because the way in which we can impact on people's lives is so significant, both in terms of what we say and in terms of what we don't say. So it's very crucial that we give a lot of attention and focus to understanding these topics and being able to have the most refined and discriminating judgment that we can towards the subject. Thank you very much. Have a good night.